Y'all ladies are never in trouble. We'll be in trouble if that happens. Well, good morning, folks.
Good morning.
We got Mike back with us and his lovely wife this morning. Back from the, he'll give us a rundown on exactly what went on a little later on. We won't have Wesley with us this week and his lovely wife. They're going to Cozumel to go scuba diving. And then, well, I don't think we'll have Wes and Terry here this morning because I've heard that they were down in College Station doing some Aggie stuff. So I think we're probably kind of it this morning. Hopefully we'll see some more people come in during our normal service. But as we go through, we need to continually think and pray about the mass shooting that happened up in Maine. That was a terrible thing. You know, we were talking about it a little earlier, and it fathoms my mind why you'll take and you'll kill 18 people and then go kill yourself. Why not take care of the first one, the last one first, and save the 18 people's lives? But I don't know. I'm not in the mind of a killer. I just don't know. And then, of course, we have what's gone on inside the Middle East. We should always pray for peace in the Middle East, and we should always stand beside Israel. And, you know, it's daunting to sit back and watch things happen and see how possibly God is using mankind at this particular point. And knowing that everything will come out because God's in it, but still being anxious about what happens, isn't it? You know, the unknowing is the hardest thing, but, you know, sometimes I think it's better, the unknowing is better than the knowing. So let's go to the Lord in prayer this morning and open up with this. And Ray, would you open us this morning?
Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for the blessings that you provide for us and for your being here in our church and being our God and our leader. And we pray, Father, that we preach and teach your word. And we pray, thank you for Terry and his preparation and his work on the lesson each Sunday. We ask that you bless him, give him wisdom and guidance. Pray, Father, for this congregation, that you help it to grow not only in wisdom but in numbers. Pray, Father, that you be with us, that in all things your will be done. In Jesus' name.
So we're at 18:1 this morning, 18:1. And Abraham's sitting at Mamre. He's got his tents all set up and he's all camping out there. You know, it's a camping life for him. You know, I just couldn't imagine being an RVer. There are people that sell everything they have and go RVing for the rest of their lives. We've had people here that did that through a couple that was here that sold everything they had and bought an RV and went thing. It's a strange life to me. I like my home. But it was a life that Abraham was set for. God had him going to and fro in the land that he was going to be given to Israel. That same land that's being fought over today. Isn't it amazing? He's walking through the land that the problem back then is the same problem we have today, is it not? And Ecclesiastes said there's nothing new under the sun. But anyway, let's get off into that. That's a rabbit trail we could jump down. We don't need to jump down that. So let's start off Genesis 18:1. It says, "And the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre, and he sat in the door of his tent in the heat of the day." Now, who is the he? Who did he appear to? Abraham. And I can say Abraham now, not Abraham, because God changed his name in the last chapter, and now I'm right again. So, at this particular time, God appeared to him. Now, that's a little different. Back in 15:1, what did God do? The last time God appeared to him. Let's go back to 15:1. What does 15:1 say? In 15:1 it says, after all these things, the Lord came to Abraham in a vision, saying, fear not, Abraham, I am the shield. I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. In 18:1, he does one step better. What happens? He bodily appears on the earth. Bodily appears on the earth. God takes human form and comes and sees Abraham. It's amazing, is it not? And we know it's God because it says the Lord. And when it uses the Lord here, according to our translation, it says, and I will go to a literal one, it says, and Jehovah appeareth. And Jehovah, so it's talking about the word it used here is Jehovah. So the God himself appears to Abraham on the plains of Mamre. And right now, when he appeared, Abraham was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. And I could just imagine this. You know, I like, whoever watched To Kill a Mockingbird? We love that movie. Amy's favorite movie, To Kill a Mockingbird. And, you know, I've never lived in that era. I was not around during that era when it was set. But that was kind of the South during the stock market crashed. And it was set in the 20s, 30s. They didn't have any air conditioning. And it kind of draws me back to the time when Anicus is sitting on the front porch in the night, you know, and the judge comes up to him and asks him, would he take and would he take the case? And you kind of have, it's the heat of the day, it's the middle of the day. You know, it's kind of stifling in that tent, right? There's no airflow, so I could just see Abraham sitting in the door of his tent in a hot summer day, sweltering, just trying to stay cool. Same way, you know, at that time you'd be sitting outside at nighttime because you don't want to be in the sweltering inside of a house. And, you know, and you don't have TVs, right? Most people didn't have radios back in those particular days either. So you sit out on your porch where it's cooler and possibly read the Bible, read a book, whatever you're going to do, and just thought about things that was going on. Different era and time, isn't it? Now we have all those things to entertain ourselves, computers, cell phones, cars to go wherever we want to go, air conditioning to stay inside the house. Don't get me wrong, I do love my air conditioning. So anyway, so he's sitting there, and God appears to him. And he lifts up his eyes and looked and said, lo, three men stood by him. So he's sitting there in the thing and he looks up and all of a sudden he sees three men standing beside him. It's like he didn't see them walking up. He didn't hear anything. It's like they suddenly appeared right beside him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them at the tent door and bowed himself to the ground. Now, this is just not a normal bow. When he saw him, he immediately knew. He had such a knowledge of who God was. When he saw these three men, he knew that God had come to visit him. He didn't sit on his hands, did he? He jumped up. He ran over to them, meet them. And he basically bowed himself. I'm talking about face down in front of the door, greeting him. Now, I'm sure this is not a normal greeting he gives everybody, okay? You know, I'm sure if somebody else walked up that wasn't God, he wouldn't be running out to him and bowing his face to the door. Okay? So he knows exactly who God is. That's the kind of intimate knowledge that he has of God, exactly who God is. He sees God and he knows exactly who it is. If we saw Jesus walk into this church today, how many of us think we would react that way? I hope we would. I hope we could recognize the Lord if he walked into this church and we would act the same way. He says, and said, my Lord, if I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will fetch a morsel of bread, and comfort ye hearts. After that ye have passed on, before therefore ye come to your servant. And they said, so do as thou hast said. In other words, he says, he comes to him, he bows down to him, and he says, don't leave my house before I let you do this. And back in that particular time, there was certain things you do when people come to visit. You have a sense of taking care of the people that come over to see you. You know, if I have friends come over and I'm doing a barbecue, and I've had friends come over and I've done smoke my meats and do all this stuff, generally when you leave my house, you're leaving with leftovers. I'll take it, I will get, whenever I figure out that everything's done, and we've all already gone to, and I don't want to leave all this stuff left over, I'll get my vacuum sealer out, and I'll start vacuum sealing stuff up. And I will send you away with something that when you leave, you know, maybe it goes to your father, or maybe it goes home for you later, or whatever. It's kind of like the hospitality, right? And this was the hospitality of the era. When somebody come into your house, you were hospitable to them. It was the way things were done. And it's a sad thing that we've moved away from that kind of hospitality. I'm sure that y'all's parents had a lot of the hospitality growing up. And we've kind of moved away from that. But they say to us, okay, let me get some water to wash your feet. Why? You're walking in the desert, your feet are going to be dirty. They're not wearing combat boots, they're wearing sandals. It's not the type of thing. So they want to wash their feet to comfort them. And, you know, if your feet are hot, it's a bad day. You know, there's a trick that we use in the shop. And if you're ever working in the shop and your feet start hurting, you take a little air blower and you put it down in your shoe. And you blow a little air into your shoe. It will brighten your whole day. It will put a pep in your step like you would not believe. So if you're ever in your shop and your feet get caught a thing, and, you know, just try that. It's a neat little trick. We've been doing it for a lot of years. But it's just kind of just like when your feet are hurting, your whole body's hurting. So anyway, bring it in. Wash your feet. Let me fetch some water. Let me get some water so I can wash your feet. And you can rest under that tree right there. Why? Because the heat of the day, it's hot, right? So they come in, it's hot. Get under that tree right there. Get you some shade. You know, pull up a little bit of ground. Have a seat. Get you some shade. Let me take care of you. He's like, I will fetch a morsel of bread to comfort ye and comfort ye your hearts. After that, ye shall pass on. For therefore ye come unto your servant, and they said, do so as thou hast said. In other words, let me give you some food. Let me comfort you in ways, and as you move on, because you have come to me, one of your servants, and I feel that I want to do this for you. And they say, okay, as you have said, go ahead and do it. We'll let you do this. He, in allowing him to serve him, them, excuse me, I allowed him to serve them, they are giving him honor to himself, right? They're allowing him to do something for them. It's nice getting things done for you, right? But I think I get the most joy out of doing something for somebody else. I enjoy when people take home my food and eat my food away from my house. And they tell me later on, say, Terry, that sure was good. I say, I know I cooked it. But, you know, there's a feeling deep in your heart when you can help somebody out. Right? At least for me. Yeah. Well, and nothing's impossible for God. So, yes, ma'am. I would have to indulge my imagination in that. It doesn't say that Abraham washed their feet, but I would like to think that he did. But like I said, it doesn't say that, so I would be amiss in telling you that that is the truth. I don't know. But we do know that Jesus humbled himself to wash the disciples' feet. So, I don't know. So he said they gave him leave to do this, correct? So at this particular time, he takes and he sends full forces into action. So Abraham hastened into the tent. He ran in there, found Sarah, and said, "Make ready quickly 3 measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes upon the hearth." It's a hot day. Now she's got to crank up the oven. Make up some tortillas, okay? It's unleavened bread. You're not going to have any leaven there. It's going to be flat bread is what you're going to have. So get some measures, get a certain measure of fine meal or dough, whatever it is they're making cakes out of. Hopefully it's gluten-free so Ruth can eat it. Knead it up and make cakes upon our hearth. So make them some, start making dinner. And Abraham ran to the herd and fetched a calf tender and good and gave it unto a young man and hasted to dress it. And he took butter and milk and the calf which he had dressed and set it before them. And he stood by them in the tree as they did eat. So what happened? Yes, Abraham, go ahead and do this for us. He hastened into the tent. He jumped up and he ran into this tent. And he started barking his orders. "Woman, make these cakes up. Knead this meal together. I'm going to tell you exactly. Get some fine meal. Knead this stuff together. Put it on the hearth. Get it cooked up, okay? You know how to do it." Then he goes out and he finds a young calf and he brings it in and he tells one of the younger men, "Butcher this up, get it on a spit, we need to cook this stuff up in a hurry." Yes, sir. Yeah, it's a possible ability. We know that Ishmael was a young man. Yeah. Possibility. I couldn't imagine. They couldn't cook I've cooked a brisket. It takes 18 hours to cook a brisket to where it's edible. I can't see they stuck a whole calf on a spit. They cut some meat out of an animal. They cooked it up. But even a good medium rare steak takes a little bit of time if you're going to kill the animal, dress it, and cut it up and... You know, you got to have at least 10 minutes of rest time once you grill that thing up. So it takes a little bit of time, but you see that he was not wasting any time. He's like, "Y'all sit over there under that tree and let me take care of you." And he hastened to get it done as quickly as possible. And then once he had got it done, he took butter and milk and the calf that he had dressed and set it before them. And he didn't even deem to eat with them, did he? He said he stood by them under the tree as they did eat. He did not feel that he should even be eating with these men. He knew his place. He knew these were God and spiritual beings that it was his honor to take care of and to see after. the theophany. So he's done all that, and I was reading something. I don't want to jump off too far down this thing, but they said that there's some commentators out there that said this was actually a breach to the kosher law that came after, because there's no way that the lawyers of the Jewish religion would argue with you that if you take the milk, if you drink the cow's milk, you don't know that it didn't come from the same mother that calf was put, that calf, so it's sitting in your stomach with the milk and the meat is in there, and it could be non-kosher. And you know how Jews like to lie, like to argue. It's pre-Mosaic law, you're right. But you know how this is something that was brought up when I read the commentaries. Evidently, it's been brought up by people after that particular time. And it's what people that don't have anything to do get to do when they sit around and don't have no time. It's amazing how your imagination will fly around if you don't have no time. And we're, is there anything wrong with thinking about that sort of stuff? You know, is there anything wrong with saying, well, maybe it was Ishmael that took and done the cow up? No, we don't know that. There's nothing wrong with that. So there's nothing wrong with thinking about what might have happened at this particular time. But we have to stick to the word when it comes to what we can teach, right? But if I'm thinking about what's happened at that particular time, if I'm thinking about what Coach brought up about, is this Ishmael, at least I'm thinking about God at this particular time, and I've got him on my mind, right? There's a lot of worse things I could be thinking about, isn't there? So, at this particular time, they were sitting there and they were eating. Okay? And it goes on to say, now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in their age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of woman. In other words, she has ceased to be fertile. She didn't have her normally cycle. They're going, understand, she was 89 years old. If Abraham was 99, she was 89 because she was 10 years younger than Abraham. That's not young even at that particular time. So she's 89 years old, and she has ceased being after the manner of woman. It says, therefore, Sarah, I've skimped 10. Now, that's real. I like, something's happening here because I missed something. Let's go back to 10. It says, and he said, I actually skipped 9 too. I need to go back to 9. He said, and they said unto him, where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, behold, in the tent. So there. You don't think God knew where Sarah was? But they said to Abraham, they said, where is Sarah, your wife? He's like, well, she's over in the tent over there. She's doing things in there. You know, I can just hear the thing, but she's over in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life. And lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door, which was behind him. So she's eavesdropping in the tent door. She can't be seen, but she's listening at the door. As I don't blame her. You got God outside. I'd be listening at the door too. And he said at that particular time, that she was going to have a child. Now, is this new news to Abraham? Why would it be new news to Abraham? What did he say back in the last chapter? Well, let's just jump back a little bit. I know it said something. I didn't think about that, but let me jump back. Here he goes, says, and we jump back. Let's start reading 15. It says, and God said to Abraham, for Sarai, thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name, and I will bless her and give thee a son of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations, king of all peoples. And Abraham fell upon his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born of him that is 100 years old, and shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear? Now, God has already told them that this was going to happen. Told them this was going to happen in the last chapter. What was Abraham's, what did he say? He laughed within himself. He kind of felt it funny. He's like, wait a second. I'm old. She's old, God. And he goes on to tell him later on, I don't want to rehash the whole chapter, but he goes on to say, you know, I do have Isaac, my son. He's like, no, this is not going to be Isaac. He's going to make a mighty nations out of, Ishmael. It's not going to be Ishmael, but I'm going to take care of him. But it will come out of your wife, Sarah. And we call that the promise, right? He is the son of promise. It's going to come through Sarah. Even though man come down, they said, and they might have had good intentions. Sarah might have had good intentions when she gave Hagar to Abraham to have a son so that he would have lineage going on. But God had different plans in this. And he's like, I have a plan. I will fulfill it. I'm sure he appreciated all their help, but he didn't need it. And he said unto Sarah thy wife, as he had beholden in the tent. And he said, I will certainly return to thee according to the time of life. And lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard this in the tent door, which was behind him. And Abraham and Sarah were old and stricken in age. And it ceased to be with Sarah the manner of women. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, am I waxed old, shall have, after I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? In other words, she's saying the same thing Abraham did when God told him in the last chapter, right? But she's saying it to herself. I can just imagine her giggling to herself and thinking to herself, how is that going to happen? We are old. If God come to y'all two today and said, you are going to have a child, I see the smile on your face right now, right? It's like, I don't see it happen. I don't understand how this is going to work. And they're in the same position. Okay? I'm only 58 years old, and I just cannot imagine having children at my age. Sarah and Abraham are 190. No, not 190, not 190. And I just couldn't, they could not imagine at this particular point. It kind of made them laugh inwardly to say, how is this even doable? But nothing's impossible with God, right? So, what did the Lord say? The Lord said unto Abraham, wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I assuredly bear a child which am old? Is there anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. He's like, you know, why did Sarah laugh about this? He said to Abraham, he's like, why is your wife in there laughing? Did I not say it was going to happen? Is anything too hard for me to do because I am God? The God that created the heaven and the earth, the God that has provided for him the whole time that he had been out there, is anything too hard for me to do? And what was Sarah's response? Evidently she heard. She was listening at the tent. She heard what was going on. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not, for she was afraid. And she said, nay, but, and he said, nay, but thou didst laugh. God knows our inwardly thoughts, don't he? So if we think God can't do something, he knows that. He knows what goes on in our little brains. She laughed internally, but God knew it. And when God called her on it, she's like, no, no, I didn't do that. Oh, yes, you did, and you know it. How many times have we told our kids that? You did that. No, I didn't do it. Give them that look. Like, yeah, I know, I know. And God does know. Okay, at that particular time, the men rose up thence and looked towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. So the man stood up, and they looked towards Sodom. That's where they were heading out to. So they were going towards Sodom. And Abraham walked away with them. And the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do, seeing that Abraham will surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed by him? Who's he asking the question to? You think he's asking the angels? Could be talking amongst the Godhead itself. It doesn't really say who he asked the question, but the question is queried out there. Shall I hide this from Abraham? And I know what the answer to the question was, no, because we go on with more of the story. So, because it's so mighty, the earth shall be mighty blessed, for I know him, and he will condemn his children. Abraham shall be blessed him. For I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he had spoken of him. Abraham's not going to earn this. The Lord's going to bring it upon him. Everything that's given to Abraham, it's all given to Abraham. The God has done it. When you go in to see when they're going to fight after Exodus to take the land, God goes before them and fights for them. And the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which is come unto me, and if not, I will know. So God says, we're going to go down and we're going to look at Sodom and Gomorrah. There's some bad things happening down there. I have heard cries about what's going on down there and the grievous sins that are going forth from that place, the terrible things that have happened there, you know, Los Angeles, New York, Dallas sometimes maybe, who knows? Sometimes Mineola probably. Hopefully not that bad. But there's some bad things happening down here. The sins have become grievous. They're so grievous that they're going to, he's going down there to see if, he's sending angels down there to see if it's true, to get a firsthand knowledge of it so that he could condemn that place and destroy it. So, the man turned their faces thence and went towards Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. So three of them walked out kind of away from the desert. He's walking on out to, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you, people come over to visit your house and they get up to go leave and you kind of walk onto the door, walk to the edge of the parking lot. You know, you're walking out to their cars or whatever. It's normal, right? That's called hospitality. That's what we do. So you kind of walk on out of your house or walking out of the area, and then the two angels, the two other men that are with them, they're the ones that's going to be going down to check out at Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham is still standing there with the Lord, right? So the Lord has sent his angels along the way to go do their thing, and Abraham is standing there with the Lord. And Abraham drew near and said, "Wilt thou also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Peradventure," or peradventure, in other words, perhaps, just maybe, "there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and not spare the place for 50 righteous that are therein?" In other words, God, if there's 50 good people down there, if there's 50 righteous people down there, would you deem to destroy the whole city and kill the 50 righteous people too? He goes on to say, "That'd be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and the righteous, and that the righteous should be as the wicked, and that be far from thee. Shall not the judge of the earth do what's right?" He's arguing with God. He's like, "Wait a second, God, it wouldn't be right to kill all the good, the righteous people with those wicked ones. You shouldn't be lining them up and doing that. Would that be, would the judge of all this earth, would that be right to the judge of all the earth?" And the Lord listens to this, and he can do whatever he wants to. He's God. He has authority, right? He could kill the whole thing, even if the 50 righteous are there. But he talks to him, and he says, "For the sake of the argument," he said, "Lord said, if I find 50 righteous within the city, then I shall spare all in the place for their sakes." In other words, if I find 50 good people down there, I will spare the whole city. I'm going to show my grace through that. If I can find 50 good people down there, I'll let even the bad people live. That's a really good God. I can understand that. And Abraham said, "Behold now, I have taken upon me to speak to the Lord, which am but dust and ashes." So I said, "Wait a second, God, I've started this talk with you. I've took it upon myself to speak with you, even though I am not worthy. I am dust and ashes. I don't have the right to argue with you about this. I don't have the right to give you counsel. I am nothing but the dust of the earth. But I've already started this." So he said, "I'm nothing but the dust of the earth. But just maybe, if there's shall lack 5 of the 50 righteousness, wilt thou destroy the city for the lack of 5? And God, I can just see him rolling his eyes like, "Okay, Abraham, if there's 45 there, I'll let them live." Yeah, Oh, in the older terms, I don't want to be thing. We call it Jewing people down. It's a thing. Yeah. So he's like, well, there's 45 people there. Don't worry about it. I'll take care. I'll let them live. And he spoke to him yet again. And he says, well, maybe, God, if there are 40 there, if there's 40 people there, and he said, I will do it for 40's sake. And he said unto him, oh, let the Lord not be angry at me. Don't get mad at me, Father. Don't be get mad at me, God, for this. Don't be angry with me. And I will speak. Just perhaps there's 30 found there. And God said, I'll do it for 30. 30 people. He's down to 30. Started at 50, and he got down, God down to 30. And he said, behold now, I have taken unto me to speak unto the Lord. I have taken unto myself to speak unto the Lord. I've already stepped out onto this limb. And I've already said, you know, he already knows exactly who he is. He's just the dust of the ground. But I have taken this point. I'm stepping out on this limb. And he says, just perhaps, God, that there be 20 found there. And God said, well, I will not destroy it for 20's sake. And he said, here we go again. This is a tenacious man, I tell you that much. He's like, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet but this once. It's like, don't be mad at me, God. This is my last time I want to talk to you about this. I will not say another word about it. This is our last discussion on this particular. But just maybe, peradventure, just maybe there shall be 10 found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. And the Lord went his way as soon as he had left communing with Abraham, and Abraham returned unto his place. I could just see God running from this man. Like, what is he going to get me down to? Two? It's kind of like, have you ever had conversation with your kids about eating their vegetables? Can I just... Six green beans. If I eat 6 green beans, am I done? Yes, okay, eat your 6 green beans, you can get up. They eat one or one or two and like, you know, what if I just had 5? You get to kind of this vibe when it's going through and bargaining because like a child, but it's amazing that God honors Abraham with allowing him to do this, right? Do you think God knew that there wasn't 10 righteous men in Sodom and Gomorrah? God knew there wasn't 50. He knew there wasn't 40. He knew there wasn't 45, 40, 30, 20, or 10. He knew this beforehand. But he actually honored Abraham with this particular time. It's an honor that God allowed him to speak to him that way. And it shows us how maybe we should father our children sometime, right? Maybe we should give them a little bit of leeway too. You know, if I used to say that whenever I first had my kids, that God didn't give us an owner's manual. But he really did give us an owner's manual, and he's the teacher. And the owner's manual is your Bible. And if you treat your kids the way God treated you, well, a little bit of grace, a little bit of rod sometimes, they generally grow up pretty well. I don't want to go on any further. I'm at my 20-minute cutoff. 20 minutes after, so I usually shut down here. I'll open the floor for any kind of comments or anything like that about what we taught this morning. Next week, we're going to kind of go into the if I'm mistaken, is Sodom and Gomorrah get destroyed? I haven't even looked into that one yet. I tend to not look too far forward. I know the basic of it, but I haven't really deemed off into it deep yet. So, but I know that Sodom and Gomorrah gets destroyed and somebody gets turned to a pillar of salt and other stuff like that's upcoming. So, more fun times in Genesis. Does anybody got anything they want to talk about this morning? He's talking about 23. He's wondering. And he's like, well, I don't know how it was saying the original. It's kind of red thing. I'll look at Young's literal translation, which gets a little bit better, a more accurate what it says. This it says, and Abraham draweth nigh and saith, dost thou also consume the righteous with the wicked? He's asking God a question. He's basically saying, will you consume the righteous with the wicked? Are you willing to kill good people with bad people? Is that not a thing that we're asking us right now? Let me ask you a question. Do you know any war you go into, you have to wonder, are you willing to kill good people with bad people? Anybody during World War II, you remember Dresden? What happened in Dresden? Do you remember that, our history? Dresden, Germany. They took and they put incendiary bombs. And they bombed them until it was a roaring inferno. So hot that it would melt the steel that was around there. There was nothing left of Dresden whenever it got done. Killed every man, woman, and child in the city. If you were in the city, you were burned to death. The Israelis have this same problem right now in Gaza, do they not? They have Hamas headquarters sitting over the top of an underground it's buried underneath the biggest hospital in Gaza. And they got to say, do you take down the whole hospital for a small amount for the terrorists that are in there? Huh? I understand that. It's a question. Do you kill the good? And I'm not saying that anybody's good. I'm just saying, do you kill the innocent along with the guilty? And it's a terrible thing, right? It's a terrible thing. And I think that's kind of what the God's, that's kind of this whole thing that Abraham's asking God. Say, God, are you willing to kill the righteous along with the guilty? Are you willing to kill them? And I think that's what the question you were asking right there. That's kind of what Abraham was asking God. He's like, are you willing to kill the righteous people along with the unrighteous? Now, we know for a fact there was only four righteous people in the thing, one man, three women, and in the end, they ran for their lives, and somebody looked back and turned into a pillar of salt. Well, we'll get to that in a week or so. But the rest of it, there wasn't righteous people in that city. That city had totally given itself over to immorality. And it's sad, but it's also a warning. It's a warning to us how bad we can get. Do you think if God did that to Sodom and Gomorrah, you think he can't do that to the United States or wherever else? Do you think God's given up his right to wrath? He says, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. It's not ours. So we need to, these years ago they said that Christians shouldn't be involved in our government. To separate us church and state. You heard all that, right? It's not in the Constitution, but there was this whole thing going around. And churches should not be involved in any kind of political maneuvers. Because if you did, you might lose your tax-exempt status. But separating the church and state was never there, but was put in there by our court systems. And we stepped away, and in very few short years, we have a government that is terrible. Has a terrible track record. I don't want to get into a bunch of politics here. I really don't want to. I'm just saying that the more that good people don't stand up, If good people don't stand up, bad people get a rule. And that's as far as I'm going to go with that. Anybody got anything else? You know, churches have went astray and went to different things. You see a lot of churches governed by the women because the man won't stand up and do their job. God has called for us to stand up and be leaders. But we have shunked that, we've given away that responsibility. We have men that are supposed to stand up and be leaders of their families. But we say to the women, raise the children and make them men. Women do the best thing they can to raise a child and make them a man, but the woman cannot teach a man how to be a man. No more than a man can teach a girl how to be a woman. You do the best you can, but we see what's happened in our nation since we've allowed it to happen. And again, we see the roll down to the bad things that are happening. We see when we allow Satan to work in our system, this is what happens. Anybody else got anything else? Mike, would you close this morning, sir?